politically incorrect.
Correct.
This is Politically Incorrect with Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson on TNT Radio.
And good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good midday, and hello. Wherever you may be, it's Mike Tennessee here again with my very dear friend, Richard Carson. We have a very special guest this afternoon on Politically Incorrect. Her name is Josephine Amy Cashman. She's no stranger to this network and no stranger to most media outlets and no stranger to most people who are interested in local politics, international politics, and all that is good that comes from Josephine. I'll introduce her a little bit more. Richard, I just wanted to mention quickly that if you're going to Hong Kong on Monday, the government says that if you arrive in Hong Kong, you'll no longer have to go into mandatory hotel quarantine.
Oh, light at end of tunnel, Mike. Light
well,
at end.
It'll, you know, it's been hit badly, that little city on the island there.
Certainly has.
And so, as with everybody else in towns in Australia, we'll come back to that maybe if we need to. Just thought I'd mention it to you in case you were
chuffing
off.
Thank you. I've just got the new passport.
Welcome to the program, Josephine. I'm Mike Tennessee, as you know. My dear friend Richard will probably want to ask you a few questions as well as me, but I just want to quickly take some time for those unfortunate people who haven't heard you on this network or any other network for that matter lately. Josephine Amy Cashman is an Aboriginal Australian lawyer and entrepreneur of Warramaya heritage. She was an inaugural member of the Prime Minister's Indigenous Advisory Council in 2013, appointed by Tony Abbott, a former Prime Minister of this country. She has addressed a United Nations Human Rights Council session focusing on violence against Indigenous girls and women. That is a topic all on its own, I know. Josephine's also a former Crown Prosecutor. Obviously, she's a lawyer, but as well as that, she's a businesswoman with more than 20 years of experience working towards economic progress for Aboriginal people. She sits on the board of the Sydney Harbour Federation Trust. She was selected as a friend of the Commonwealth Treasury in 2016. And in 2018, she was honoured as a recipient of the UTS Faculty of Law Alumni Award for Excellence. She's undertaken numerous consultancy and voluntary roles for a variety of private, public, and not-for-profit organisations. Now, we'll come back to some of the great things that you've done, Josephine. First of all, what do you think is the most important topic of the day from your perspective? What's the most important topic of the day, do you think?
Government corruption.
Yeah. Expand a little bit on that, would you?
Unfortunately, it's clear that our governments are not acting in the best interests of the Australian people, and rather many, I'd say the majority, are driven by self-interest, the need to prevent self-incrimination, and are following what big international organisations want and what is best for their pocket and corporate cartels, and they are not acting in the best interest of the Australian people.
Josephine, if I might just, Richard here, take you up on that point. When do you think our governments started to become so corrupt? 30, 40 years ago? I get the impression it's been a process, unfortunately. A friend of mine used the comment the other day about too many of our politicians, WIIFM, what's in it for me? And that's a very sad reflection on the quality of the individual that we now have lording things over us. But do you have an idea when it might have started to be so hopeless? It's not recent.
It's not recent. And a learned person like yourself would have done a lot of research on that. From my perspective, the current research I've undertaken, which is probably one of the biggest conspiracies against the Australian people to commit treason, certainly occurred around the beginning of the United Nations, then continued from the Pilbara strike. Many people would know that was the 1940s. Right. Then Wave Hill walkout, which is Gurindji country in the Northern Territory. Those two trigger events were, in my view, directly related to getting Aboriginal people off farms that they've been living on as individual clans into shanty town type situations in order to weaponize race, as seeing now. Then you've got 1967, which I think was a total hoax and a fraud against the Australian people, the 1967 referendum. One of the lead people in that was a South Sea Islander, Faith Bandlett, actually went to the East Germany before that, when it was in the middle of the Cold War, and then came back illegally, came back and ran this 1967 race based upon a fraudulent basis, saying that Aboriginal people weren't counted, when Emeritus Professor Blaney, our top historian, rightly points out that Aboriginal people were actually counted more than every other Australian from his learned review of the historical material. And that allowed the Commonwealth to use the development facilitated the Commonwealth being able to make laws for Aboriginal people, which saw the Aboriginal Affairs Industrial Complex be set up, and then provided them with the mechanisms to distort history, which they have over a number of decades, in order to create this Native Title Act, which was designed by the UN, which Keating only consulted with five hand-selected failed leaders he trusted, in order to actually stop the progress of Australia by cutting off the opportunity to use all the land under subject to native title, which is a title that individuals cannot own, to stop Australia from exploiting its natural resources to our benefit. It's not for Aboriginal people. So I hope that's not too complicated, but it's definitely one of the key ways they're undermining the Australian nation is through Aboriginal people. And yes, there are other factors as well, which is separate to this.
Sorry, who was the main orchestrator of that, Keating, was it? The United Nations, was it Paul Keating, or did he pass that piece of legislation, or what happened?
So how it happened, Mabo should never have been applied to the mainland. It's a case, Mabo number two was a case that involved the Mer people, the Torres Strait Islands, yep. People who understand that Torres Strait Island was annexed to Queensland only in the 1800s. Now, they applied that case. They used that case, which I'd say they'd used historians like Henry Reynolds, who is a liar, the judgment, on the basis to pass the legislation. Now, Robert Tickner jumped on a plane within 2 weeks of this High Court judgment to Geneva, and the actual legislation was drafted in a committee in Geneva at the United Nations. And I became aware of it growing up because older people said to me, only five, Keating only consults with his, they call them the Magnificent Seven, but in this respect, there are five people. He only consulted with them, and then the native title legislation was passed. So yes, and you would know that at the same time, around the same period rather, in the 90s, we had him signing up to the Woke King's Agenda 21, and they're directly linked. And there's other things. Keating passed the Uniform Evidence Act, which codified the common law. There are sections in there which give a judicial officer the ability to look at laws made by the UN. Australians should make the laws for Australians, not the UN making laws for Australians. And Keating is a key trader. He also set up the compulsory super system, which is directly helping BlackRock and this woke investment problem we've got, which is what Larry Fink and Hillary Clinton are determined to use the ESG woke investing principles to kill Australian businesses. And our compulsory super goes to Larry Fink as the biggest trustee in the world.
Yeah, I think they have about a 40% share of the trust, the super funds or something or other over here. I'm not sure about that. You might know better.
Well, I believe that, you know, the union funds, yes, they have a substantial, and people don't know this is a multi-pronged attack, but there is great news, because when you understand, there's a lot of propaganda, as you know, but when you understand the enemy, not that difficult to defeat them. When you don't know who they are, it's more difficult. I've seen this sort of behaviour. That's what worried me. You would have known a lot of this before me, but I've seen this sort of behaviour in courts when prosecuting pedophiles and fraudsters. It's
Josephine, it's interesting, isn't it? You mentioned the fact that the Mabo decision, the High Court one, was really, should have been related only to the area which it involved at the outset, but it seems to have been completely and utterly applied across the board to cover the whole of Australia. But nobody seems to understand why that can be, other than you and others. The general population doesn't understand it, do they? And nobody's really managed to educate, as a result of that, what the true situation should be, rather than what it is regarded as being.
Correct.
What do we do about that?
Correct. We are victims of manipulative actors driven by greed and control and abuse. We are the victims. It's not our fault. They've betrayed us. First thing is to deal with the betrayal and deal with it in a way where people aren't feeling like they're stupid. No one wants to feel that they're stupid. What we have to do is realize our own power as individuals and inform ourselves and then others, because we've got the numbers. This is a very small group of people, and unfortunately they have been able to manipulate, bribe, etc. It's just now we've got to inform ourselves and others. That's our responsibility as Australian citizens.
Well, one of the difficulties, as Richard would probably be quick to point out, is that our media are always quick to promote something that is easy to promote and help to promote by those with the power and the money, which you're talking about. But how do you get across the idea that everything that's being put out there by the media could actually be wrong?
Well, the mainstream media is dying. Australians know that the media is lying to us. They're dying. Even, you know, some of the more popular Sky News, I think their leadership's gone down by a quarter since January, maybe more. It was a quarter like a few months ago. So although we're not seeing it, we are winning. We're the only Western country not to have BLM, you know, destruction. And that was a result of a few of us Australians, I'm an Australian first, with Aboriginal heritage, undermining the major actors in this. The whole psychological operation is to make people feel like they can't make a difference. You need to push through. We need to be focused.
I think there's no doubt about that, Josephine. And I know that the TNT radio network has grown out of what you're talking about. We'll come back to that. I'd like to come back to the BLM scenario as well in a moment. We will go to a short break and be back with you in a couple of minutes.
You should hear what Jesse Zirawell is talking about.
In addition to calling up 300,000 reservists, which does not include conscripts or university students, Putin has made some what could be described as inflammatory statements, if I can use that cliche, regarding the possible use of nuclear weapons.
In Russian language media, I mean, especially among hardliners, like people who really support the special operation, they're saying this is really, really bad because, first of all, territorial gains aside, what basically has happened is that Russia took control of territory, and then those Ukrainians who wanted to cooperate with Russia and consider themselves Russian, if the idea here was that Russia was going to go into Ukraine to protect ethnic Russians, to guarantee that, you know, Ukrainians can speak Russian and live in harmony and peace with Russia, the problem is that all these territories that Russia goes into, they're not guaranteed that they're staying, you know? And sometimes, in some cases, they say like, oh yeah, we're here forever. And then, you know, a month later, they leave. How can you do this? It's so self-defeating, and it makes cooperation or welcoming the Russian military as liberators impossible. It's like a death sentence.
Jesse Zirawell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Public school is the instituted agency of socialism throughout every community.
The U.S. government has no authority to have any role in education.
We're going to lose our very republic if we don't stop this indoctrination of children in government schools.
What happened to us in China can happen here.
Have one kind of education and then call it equity.
It's about outcomes. It's about trying to force us all to be equal.
I think we're going to have a race civil war in our hands.
We are exposing kids to pornography as early as kindergarten. Parents just don't know.
No, not anymore. Not anymore. Parents need to wake up. They don't have the interests of your child at heart.
Truth and Lies in American Education at SalemNow.com.
Silence for thinking differently? Silence for thinking differently. Not here. Silence for asking questions? Not here. Not here. Silence for discussing the other side of the story? Not on TNT Radio. Join the conversation anytime. Search TNT Radio on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Getter, or Gab. Download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And here we are back being politically incorrect again with Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson, and our very special guest this afternoon, Josephine Cashman. I just wanted to just digress momentarily because here where we are in the southeastern part of Queensland in Australia, as with the other states of Australia, on Thursday we had a national holiday declared by the Prime Minister over a week ago, prior to him going to England for our late Majesty's funeral, as a day of mourning for the country. And I noticed, I couldn't help but notice, that there were a number of demonstrations by a number of First Nations people in various parts of Australia. I just wondered what your take on that was in terms of the national holiday being declared as being a mourning day. Did you have any particular idea of what occurred on that day from what you could see in various parts of Australia?
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to address that. Firstly, there's no such thing as First Nations. Aboriginal people were hunter-gatherers. I've got colonial and Aboriginal heritage. I have no problem with my ancestors being hunter-gatherers. Like Professor Blaney said, it's the triumph of the nomads. We should be proud of all our history. History is being weaponized. Now, secondly, I know, and a lot of Corys know, that Lydia Thorpe is a crown plant. That the whole design of that was to kill our Republican movement, to behave extraordinarily stupidly, and it was very bad taste, in order to try to ruin the chances we have to get away from this woke king and his great reset agenda, which is going to kill the Australian barbecue, which is very sexist, I note, and our way of life.
Interesting you say, because I've always wondered where the term First Nations came from. I've heard it in other countries. For instance, I first heard it, really, I think, in Canada some years ago. But I noticed that it's crept in more and more and more in very recent times in whatever we hear or read here in Australia. Where did it come from, do you think?
Well, it's you'll know that in the 1960s, the UN passed the anti-colonial movements. Well, they passed, they had a declaration in relation to it. That started in the 1950s. It's like colonialism is like a dirty word because this is an attack on the working and middle class people of Australia and the world. This is, they're using, it's come from the UN to answer your question. And you'll recall that in the 1960s, we had the Asian and African bloc taking over the numbers in the UN. Mm-hmm. Now, they use these African countries. Like, look what happened in the Congo after the UN interfered. These countries are completely run by warlords who the corporate cartels like, and these big internationals and big players. And they do this to asset strip these third world countries. They tie them to these IMF and World Bank loans, which state that the means of production has to be controlled by the warlords under the control of the corporate cartels and the Clintons, etc. So, and then they won't let them industrialise. They have to use green energy, which is five times the cost. 4 million people die every single year in the third world as a result of cooking over an open fire in their homes from pollution, from indoor pollution. These people are cruel. The same people want to asset strip Australia. And the whole thing about this, it's a long-reaching plot, but these people, their hubris is going to bring them down because Aboriginal people do not comply, are not involved. They've left such a trail. The burning of the flag was a bit of an act of desperation, in my view, because they're losing. They're losing big time. They're being exposed and they're panicking, and they should be panicking because they've committed treason, carries a life sentence, and anybody involved in it is facing a life sentence.
Josephine, just elaborate on these people committing treason. Can you sort of point fingers at who they are, or are these part of the background?
Absolutely.
Oh, good. Right. So you're gone.
Yep. On the last program, the last couple of shows I've been on, and thanks to TNT Radio because they actually being truthful and believe in the Australian nation, Australian people, are really grateful to TNT Radio and all the people who work on these shows. Incredible people. Thank you. Exposed is the Dukin hoax. That's an example of treason. But you know the Senate inquiry went all over the world that Naughty Rio Tinto had blown up a sacred site. There was no sacred site. I can prove it. So it was fossilised dung. Aboriginal people were in there removing it. In 2015, the WA Premier, the festival celebrating blowing up the Dukin case. The whole thing was designed to have the recommendation to pass the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, which is basically the mechanism to splinter Australia into sub-nations. Now, under Section 80 of the Criminal Code, an attempt to commit treason means you're guilty of treason, and it's to restrain our country. Now, to trying to undermine one of our only industries we have left besides farming and cut off our revenue is one of the worst things anybody can do, because who's going to pay for the hospitals, the roads? Our country will go into free fall, and that's what they want, so the IMF and World Bank can come in. Now, the people involved, Mike Cannon-Brooks, Bill Shorten, Hillary Clinton, Podesta, the AACR, Noel Pearson, Marcia Langton, the Australian government.
Josephine, on that, who were the government perpetrators on that Dukin hoax period? Was that state government or federal government or both?
Federal, both. Federal.
Right. And who were
both? Both. And you'll recall that Ken Wyatt's nephew, the person who was the WA treasurer and Aboriginal Affairs Minister, got put on the Rio Tinto board after the hoax. So it's both the WA government, it's all the states and territories. And willful blindness is also an offence. And then you've got Scott Morrison. And guess what? His chief of staff was the government relations person for Rio Tinto, as if he didn't know. And the Australian citizen, the CEO at the time, who's from France, moved here, became a citizen, moved here in 2017, was the scapegoat. He didn't commit. He didn't do anything. He didn't even sign off on the blast. And he's now, he's in the paper, it was reported, he's suing Rio Tinto. I hope he wins and it gets exposed, because this is the same crookery, same group that WikiLeaks exposed in 2016. Sunrise Project, Hillary Clinton, George Soros, Bill Shorten, who think they can just destroy our country, to asset strip it like they've done in Africa.
Just on that point, I mean, the Clinton family seems to come up all over the world as being pretty bad eggs. But where the hell does Shorten come into it?
You'll recall that. Sorry.
You can't.
Recall that in 2016, WikiLeaks also released documentation that Bill Shorten and George Soros, an agent of the British elite, a noisy operator, a decoy, these fascists using a Jewish person, of course they are. So you recall that they established Get Up Together, but they also established it with Maurice Schwartz, who owns the Monthly, the Weekly, the Saturday paper. He's a relation of George Soros, confirmed by Richard Poe, who's been studying them for 30 years. So they established it. Now, Sunrise Project actually, and you can find this, gave Get Up a $50,000 donation, but they're all working together in tandem. And the 2006 WikiLeaks, which Miranda Devine reported on, and The Australian also, found that these actors are all working together, funding each other. Sandler Foundation comes in, who's a big donor for the Hillary Clinton. And John Podesta, the chairman for Hillary Clinton's failed 2016 election bid, was discussing the destroying Australia using Indigenous people in this WikiLeaks. So this is an international cartel, with so much hubris, they're coming undone. I can see it.
Well, it's probably not obvious to the general layperson in the street, unfortunately, because when you're very close to it all, and you've been doing it for quite some time, you're seeing it. But because our mainstream media is very dilatory in how they report or even take up an issue with anything, it's as though we're all sort of sleepwalking to Nowheresville at the moment, while you're making a great observation that it may well collapse. I'm not so sure about that at the moment. You're feeling confident?
Well, I know. Tanya Plibersek was halted the fertiliser manufacturing plant in the Pilbara based upon the Dukin hoax. I did a little bit of, advocacy, and she flipped. We're the only Western country, not like I mentioned before, not to have BLM destruction. I know they don't, their house is built on sand. They don't have the Aboriginal community's support for this.
Right.
I have detailed 10,000 word essays. They are weak. I don't care whether the media covers this or not. I care about the result.
Yep.
And I have noticed since I was out in Wilcannia, I helped some very capable elders who were very unconfident because of the way Aboriginal Affairs bashes them around. We built confidence. I've got people I've built confidence with who are telling their stories. We have recorded elders all over the country. I can point to all their lives. They're in a little corner It's only a matter of time. You know what? They can do whatever they like. As the thing is, part of the process, what they're doing to the Australian people and to people all over the world, is inundating us with information, is creating us to be constantly in a state of fear. Now, all of us have to really work on not falling into that trap. Mm. We also have to look at what they're doing. I suggest everybody reads Rules for Radicals, because a lot of these things don't make sense. And if you fight, you know, if you're trying to fight these people on a logical basis, you'll fail, like black versus white, because they're not logical. They're trying to gaslight the Australian public and get everybody emotional. I know that I've been able to frame the debate, even though I'm a small person trying, but it makes an incredible difference. Everybody does. And that's what we've got to push through, because the whole psychological operation is designed to make people feel like they're isolated, nobody cares, we're all on our own. It's not the case at all. And this is why I got involved with some other incidences where they were claiming that Aboriginal people were force jabbed, you know, held down in the Northern Territory by the Australian Defence Force. Australian Defence Force is loyal to Australia first. Obviously, these actors are scared of them. We're not on our own.
The support group around you, is it reasonable, or you're sort of a bit isolated or on your own? How do you, you're taking a lot on. Coming on to shows like this is obviously a help, but the essence, I don't hear enough or see enough in the media to be alerting the Australian public at large. Perhaps I'm not seeing it.
Well, I'm never on my own. I'm a Christian. I've got God. Yeah. You know, I'm never on my own. I'm never, ever. I know this is God's call. And you know what? People should think about, you know, having a bit of faith, being a bit stronger, and really take an opportunity to look around and see what's really happening, and don't miss the blessing. You know, Australia is the land of the great Holy Spirit, and we've never had a war on this country. And I do believe that they've totally miscalculated the Australian people. Everything is designed to make people feel like, you know, they don't make a difference. And I have to say, I believe that the people who are in the freedom movement, a lot of them are UN actors, provable, and they really let the Australian people down. So Albanese got in on 30% of the vote. That's a great thing. Australia's always voted against climate change alarmism. We're not mugs. And the good thing is, we are not quick to anger either. So they haven't succeeded in creating the environment for coloured revolution. These people behind this have done so many coloured revolutions all around the world. And, you know, give it to the good old Aussie to outsmart them.
Just on that, you touch on the coloured revolutions, whatever else. The people behind the Black Lives Matter infrastructure, are they here, or are they mainly in America, in Europe? What's your take on that?
Oh, they're definitely here.
Right.
One of the main people, organisers, is a guy called Paddy Gibson, who has a cushy job at the University of Technology, Sydney. He's an ISIS supporter in an Indigenous unit run by another fake Aboriginal, Larissa Barrant, Larissa Barrant, Michael Lavarch's wife, Attorney General in the Keating government. She's a fake Aboriginal. We believe that her ancestor was actually the head of the SS in Poland, believe it or not. We've done a lot of research on her. And you've also got, she appointed Bruce Pascoe as a professor when he doesn't even have a teaching degree. It's a disgrace. It's so offensive to Australian elders who are actually proper academics. So they have a little cell at the University of Technology where I won the Law Award. It should correct something else. I'm no longer on the Sydney Harbour Federation Trust, but I digress for one moment. That's now, right. The person who was leading the BLM movement was another fake Aboriginal. Her brother, her half-brother was an Aboriginal person. Now, one of my colleagues, an Australian with Aboriginal heritage, tried to expose this lady, Tanya Hunter. Tanya was from the Pilbara. She was in an orphanage and had a twin and doesn't know her or her Aboriginal family. She lived in the US for a while and she was absolutely disgusted by somebody pretending to be something they are not. The Australian Greens Party absolutely smashed Tanya. They were unrelenting on her. They tried to cause her a nervous breakdown. The good thing is we won that. We were able to undermine this LaToya rule, who's actually got a lot of blue blood. I posted her genealogy, some of it, on Twitter. She's related to all these, you know, lords, ladies, etc. It's very interesting because a lot of the people behind the BLM movement, ancestors were slaveholders. This is neo-feudalism. Nothing short of it.
Mike, do you have a query on all of this?
I did. No, I was kidding. I mean, I'm just absolutely... I'm not flabbergasted because it's not all new to me. But what I'm curious about is what is the purpose of these people pretending to be something they are not? What do they hope to achieve from it, Josephine?
I'm going to have a crack at money.
Well, Bruce Pascoe was, they try, well, a massive weapon of war, you learned men would know more than me, is the distortion of history. That's why in many countries now, it is a criminal offence to maliciously distort history. In Australia, they've used the Racial Discrimination Act, which is a joke, is the reason why we've got such problems in this country, because people can't speak freely. They use these people because they think Aboriginal people are stupid, are too stupid to follow through on their treasonous plot. They use Bruce Pascoe, who I believe was going to be used for a High Court challenge on terra nullius, which is actually an Algerian term. It's got nothing to do with British law, another weaponization of history, fabrication rather. Then they use these people because they're nasty, outrageous, to create the right environment for coloured revolutions. Now, in order to create a coloured revolution, you need a division. We don't have that in Australia, so they have to get their actors, their lousy actors, privileged lousy actors, to do their dirty work. And they have they use them because Aboriginal people are actually quite conservative in nature and haven't participated. 77% of Aboriginal people marry a non-Aboriginal person, mostly Anglo-Saxon. And we've always mixed this country. All our ancestors worked together in the greatest industrialisation of the nation. And, you know, they have to bring in fake actors because Aboriginal people aren't as malicious, full of hate, even though they've tried to hurt them, weaponize it, not give them private property rights and defund the police they have since the 70s, provable, in order to weaponize criminal justice to make every Aboriginal person look like a murderer and a rapist. So the thing is, they've used these actors, and it's actually quite a blessing because they are so vulnerable now. Because, you know, I've got hours and hours and hours of footage which disproves what they've said.
Yes, so really people are trying to make Aboriginal people look to be the perpetrators when they, in fact, they are the victims of others pretending to be them but creating all the fuss, creating all the problems. Is that what you're saying?
Well, Lydia Thorpe is Aboriginal, but her family's known as a crime family in Victoria, and she's got no credibility. No one likes her. And she's, you know, she behaves like a drug addict because she is a drug addict. And obviously she's about self-interest. I posted a an email, or rather a message I received from someone from her area who Lydia Thorpe's family arranged for all these Aboriginal people to become homeless because they want the land for themselves. They think after the Victorian Treaty, Dan Andrews is going to give them all this land.
That's exactly the sort of thing I was looking at. Now,
we've
got to go to a break, Richard. So can you hang fire for a minute and keep on the line? We'll come back.
Don't drop the phone, Josephine.
I won't.
Excellent.
The Great Reset began in the 1930s? Oh, yes. Franklin Delano Roosevelt's key advisor laid out a primitive version of the Great Reset.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Stuart Chase, a key advisor to former President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, envisioned an early version of the Great Reset in the 1930s and 40s. Chase envisioned what he called government control of energy resources, hydroelectric power, coal, petroleum, natural gas, the control of transportation, railway, highway, airway, waterway, and the control of agricultural production. Chase was so enamored with government control of every aspect of our lives that he even looked up to fondly the Soviet Union. At the end of his 1932 book, A New Deal, Stuart Chase asked, quote, "Why should the Soviets have all the fun remaking the world?" unquote. Well, we could update that to the year 2022 and ask, "Why should the Chinese have all the fun remaking the world?" as the once free West now is copying the social credit type system of China and limiting freedom for millions. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
Suck it up.
It's not a big deal.
Snap out.
Just get over it.
We've all heard it. But if you're experiencing extreme stress, it's not just in your head. It can affect your entire body because toxic stress can hurt us physically without us even knowing it. If you've lost a job, worry about your next meal, or have trouble making it through the day, if you're feeling the effects of stress, we can help. Text STRESS to 211-211 to find a solution.
Don't want the government to know what you're buying? Use cash. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And here we are on Politically Incorrect with Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson and our very, very special guest this afternoon, Josephine Cashman, which, of course, that goes along with what was just said about using cash instead of plastic. Josephine, I noticed in something you'd written, or something that I'd read, that's for sure, that one of the Wilcannia elders, Sissy King, explained the influence of extremist actors in this way. Wilcannia was harmonious. They went to church, had jobs. Then all of a sudden, the black power activists took over. They stopped the church, brought in alcohol and pushed the harmony away. Now it's the very same Aboriginal elites who are responsible for this mess who push the Uluru voice. That's a very strong statement, isn't it? And can you explain it a bit more for me?
Yes. So after 67, before 67, I should say that, you know, this was the period she's talking about in that period.
Sure.
Aboriginal Affairs was created. Now, in the area that my mum's from, Taree, my mum was telling me a story where the elders at Purfleet, which is the Aboriginal reserve outside of Taree, used to have to go past there on the highway, were talking and saying, "We miss the old church." And mum presumed must have been someone in the mission because it's quite out of control now. Who did it? And she said, no, it was Marcia Langton, Gary Foley, and all the radicals who came up and burnt down the church. There's a great guy who wrote this book called Red Over Black, and he also gave evidence on Hansard in 1982 in the Queensland Parliament. His statement is recorded on Hansard. His name's Jeff McDonald. You could find it online. He spoke about the deliberate attempt to radicalise Aboriginal people. Now, Jeff's a very interesting man, now deceased. Grew up in the Communist Party of Australia, and he was kicked out over an ideological dispute. He went on to work in unions, and he ended up being in the Nurses' Federation. And it was there he got dissertations from nurses and Aboriginal elders to get the union to advocate to stop removing the police. It was Charles Perkins who was removing the police, and Aboriginal elders had a very good relationship with the police, and they couldn't cope with the alcohol. Now, they have defunded the police since the 1970s, and Geoffrey McDonald also talks about Aboriginal people, Christians, being bashed and being disregarded. Now, in New South Wales, it was with the Rann government in the 70s that Marcia Langton and Linda Burney's mentor, name eludes me at the moment, person on the far, Linda Bergen, who in the Rann government actually rolled something that was called the Federation Trust. The Federation Trust held freehold land in a trust for Aboriginal Australians in New South Wales who were on missions and reserves. Some weren't, right? So the missionaries who were very educated were helping these communities become completely self-sufficient. In Arnhem Land, at Elko Highland, place where I used to go when I was a bush lawyer, senior solicitor in East Arnhem Land, I spoke to a missionary who said every single family had their own fishing boat. Now, you know, the people at Elko Island have two shops and they pay $60 to buy a DVD. These shops are run by people, opportunistic people. They've gone from, you know, being functional. Well, Kenya, you may know, was called the queen of Western New South Wales. This is also a story of the managed decline of rural Australia. They had 12 hotels. They were making rashes there. Sissy's mum and dad, she grew up in a home with a mum and dad who had a job, who, you know, were great citizens. I think this is frozen.
You mentioned
I can't hear you.
Charles Perkins.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Yeah, you're fine. We're paying attention. Very fascinating. Yeah.
You mentioned Charles Perkins. What? Tell me, because he was forever saying something, wasn't he? He was given a lot of press, Charlie Perkins. And I just wanted to go back to that time where I think you said that he was the one who took the police out of Wilcannia. Is that right?
Well, out of Aboriginal communities generally. That's what Geoff McDonald said.
Yeah.
He actually spoke to ministers. This is in his evidence on Hansard, in the Whitlam government, who said that Charles Perkins has more power than cabinet ministers. Why? International actors, international players. Don't forget he went to Cambridge, came back, and people promoted him. I have investigated this quite thoroughly. Now, his daughter did the Bruce Pascoe documentary on fake Bruce Pascoe, making him an Aboriginal person, got $6 million to do an SBS documentary. Now she's doing another documentary on the Frontier War hoax, right? And there was an investigation. I recall it was in the Hawke government, where his daughter, Hetty, the other daughter, was given a loan by this Aboriginal Development Bank they set up, and they bought a pub with it. They were just rorting. All the money in Aboriginal Affairs has been rorted. It hasn't gone to the community, but it's designed to really annoy Australian people. We give you all this money and then you're so aggressive to us. I understand both sides. That's why, you know, I'm very sensitive to both sides.
That's been a big problem for many, many years, hasn't it? Because where you've got communities, and when I say communities of not just Aboriginal people, but white people as well, in communities in which the best endeavours have integrated both Aboriginal and white people together, these community leaders, if you like, have been given the right to control various grants or monies paid to them to disperse, and yet time after time, there was evidence to show that the monies weren't really dispersed. They were actually spent by those community leaders, so-called,
on themselves,
on their own selves, or their friends or relatives, for all the sorts of things which could have been, the monies could have been spent on the communities themselves. You would have come across plenty of that sort of evidence, wouldn't you, Josephine?
Yeah, well, I got kicked off Ken Wyatt's advisory council as a senior advisor for raising the fact and asking to speak to Australian Crime Commission and the AFP about a pedophile leader of the Uluru Voice, who my uncle, Ray Hurst in Taree, had a former corporal in the Malaysian jungle for 2 years, has been after for 40 years. And there were seven children in Kempsey who killed themselves related to the sale of the illicit drug ICE and getting kids on it into prostitution. Why is the government protecting this lot? The Australian Crime Commission did a seven-year investigation. You can find the redacted summary on my website,
well,
where
I'll
they
tell you
found
who can
like
tell
organized
you that.
Crime. Pardon?
Richard can tell you the answer to that. Well, politicians, basically.
Oh, no. Don't get me drawn on those, please, Mike. I can't stand them. I think there's very few.
I told you he'd be able to tell you.
No. I'm fascinated by everything Josephine's telling us, though, because it's a bit like some of the other gentlemen we've had on the show, and I'm not suggesting you're a gentleman, Josephine, but some of them.
What about me?
I know you're just in the background. Background noise.
We've only got a couple of minutes,
come on.
Richard. I want you to ask Josephine the question about the Uluru Voice. I don't think people understand it.
You pose the question, you know it. Off you go.
What do you think, Josephine? Is it a good, bad, indifferent? Why doesn't anybody really understand what it's about?
Well, they're using dystopian, mythological, I'd say cultist-type language. I mean, you look at the Uluru statement, it is nonsense. It is rubbish. This whole thing is designed to divide Australians. They're failing to convince the Australian people that it's a good thing. It is total nonsense. It's driven by these international actors who want to asset strip our country. It is being designed by the United Nations. It's a horrible attack on the Australian people, and it's insulting our intelligence.
All right,
you have told many people who are intelligent who might understand that. How do you get the message across to other people, not just here in Australia, but in all the countries of the world in which the same sort of thing has happened, is happening, or is likely to happen?
You don't have to be intelligent to work this out. You have to have common sense. And obviously these people who are behind this conspiracy have no common sense. People know they're being lied to. Now, what I can do is tell the truth, provide with the evidence and be reliable. This is a problem for all working and middle class people of the world. Everybody plays a part. Don't let them tell you that you are not a powerful force for change. We will win our country back when people believe in their ability to influence others. Everything that's done in the public arena is trying to divide us. Let's just agree, Australians should make laws for Australians, not international actors and corporate cartels who've asset stripped most of Africa making laws for us.
You'll have
this idea of the voice in Parliament, in your view, is quite divisive, isn't it?
It's an attack. It's actually an attack on the principles of the free world. Now, when the law treats any Australian unequally, we're all unequal and we're in a huge risk. This is not driven by Aboriginal people. That is what I've proven. They haven't got the Aboriginal people's support. That's why they're panicking and they're reverting to these stupid trigger events. They failed at every single one because they're complete failures. Criminals, traitors, failures, they're going to fail.